Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and Jill Robbins. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, New Zealand's top court recently ruled a man can be extradited to China to face a murder charge. In a 3-2 decision, the court found that the accused, Kyungyup Kim, could get a fair trial in China and would not be tortured. Concerns over those issues have stopped most democratic countries from extraditing suspects to China in recent times. Like many other nations, New Zealand does not have an official extradition treaty with China. But Kim's lawyers said they would try to stop the extradition. First, they will make a complaint with the United Nations Human Rights Committee. Then, if needed, they would request a new judicial ruling based on Kim's poor health. Lawyer Tony Ellis said Kim was very upset by the judgment. He said Kim is in a suicidal state because of his health issues. Those issues include severe depression, a small brain tumor, and liver and kidney disease. Ellis said China may now begin to start extradition cases against people who have fled the country and been accused of economic crimes. In making its decision, the New Zealand High Court overturned an earlier appeals court ruling. Two judges on the top court had removed themselves from taking part in the new ruling. Before being promoted to the top court, they were members of the appeals court. Both had ruled against the extradition. The High Court found that China was able to guarantee that Kim would be jailed in Shanghai. New Zealand officials could monitor him from there before and during his trial. That would include visits at least every second day before his trial and at other times he requested. China also told officials that Kim would serve his prison sentence in Shanghai if convicted. The court found that if no substantial grounds exist for believing an individual accused is at risk of torture, the individual should not avoid prosecution for a serious crime. Kim was arrested in 2011 after China asked to extradite him on one charge of intentional homicide. He was imprisoned in New Zealand jails for more than 5 years. He spent another 3 years under electronic monitoring. According to court documents, Kim is a South Korean citizen who moved to New Zealand more than 30 years ago with his family when he was 14. He is accused of killing 20-year-old Pei Yun Chen in Shanghai. He was traveling to the city to visit a different woman who was his girlfriend at the time. Chinese police say they have evidence linking Kim to the crime, including a bed covering found with the body. Kim says he is innocent. Ellis said his defense case would be that his former girlfriend is responsible for the crime.
Ukrainian officials say Russian missiles hit the western Ukrainian city of Lviv, killing at least 7 people. Russian forces are targeting areas across Ukraine in an attempt to weaken the country's defenses. Lviv had escaped the worst violence of the Russian invasion that began almost 2 months ago. People believed the city was safe. Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal, meanwhile, promised to fight absolutely to the end in strategically important Mariupol. The few Ukrainian fighters remaining there ignored a surrender-or-die message from the Russians on Sunday. Maxim Kozitsky is the governor of the Lviv region. He said the Russian missile strikes hit 3 military facilities and an automobile repair shop. He said the wounded included a child. A hotel sheltering Ukrainians who had fled fighting in other parts of the country was among the buildings badly damaged, Lviv's mayor said. "The nightmare of war has caught up with us even in Lviv," said Ludmila Turchak, who fled with 2 children from the eastern city of Kharkiv. Military experts say Russia is increasing strikes on weapons factories, railways, and other infrastructure targets across Ukraine. The Russian military wants to weaken the country's ability to defend against a major ground war in the Donbas. Donbas is Ukraine's mostly Russian-speaking eastern area. The Russian military claimed its missiles struck more than 20 military targets in eastern and central Ukraine in the past day. The military also said it hit another 315 Ukrainian targets and launched 108 strikes on Ukrainian troops and military equipment. The claims could not be confirmed by the Associated Press. Ukraine's government halted civilian evacuations for a second day on Monday. It said Russian forces were attacking and blocking passages used by civilians to flee. The government of the Luhansk area in the Donbas said 4 civilians trying to escape were shot and killed by Russian forces. Deputy Prime Minister Irina Vereshchuk said Russia could be tried for war crimes over its refusal to permit civilians to leave Mariupol. Russia is set on capturing the Donbas after its attempt to take Kyiv failed. Russian-backed separatists already control some territory in the Donbas. "We are doing everything to ensure the defense of eastern Ukraine," President Volodymyr Zelensky said in his nightly speech to the nation on Sunday. The offensive in the east, if successful, would give Russian President Vladimir Putin a needed victory. Many Russian soldiers have died, and sanctions are badly hurting the country's economy. I'm Dan Novak.
Joyce Aries was feeling fine when she agreed to get a blood test for research. So she was surprised when the test came back with signs of cancer. After a repeat blood test and 2 more tests for cancer, she was found to have Hodgkin lymphoma. "I cried," the 74-year-old retiree said. "Just a couple of tears," and thought, "Okay. Now what do we do?" Ares had volunteered to take a blood test that is being viewed as a new way to check for cancer among healthy people. It looks for cancer by checking for DNA parts broken from shed cancerous cells. Such blood tests, called liquid biopsies, are already used in patients with cancer to establish treatment and check to see if cancerous growths come back. Several drug companies are pushing for the blood test as part of regular health screening to find cancerous growths or tumors in certain parts of the body. Grail, a California-based company, is far ahead of others with 2,000 doctors willing to prescribe the $949 test. Most insurance plans do not cover the cost. The Food and Drug Administration demands an extensive study of a drug or vaccine before approval. A review by the agency is not required for this kind of blood test. But Grail plans to seek approval from the FDA while it is marketing the tests. Experts are not sure whether the tests could improve Americans' health or help cut the cancer death rate. U.S. government researchers, meanwhile, are planning a large trial with 200,000 volunteers over 7 years to study the blood tests. "They sound wonderful, but we don't have enough information," said Dr. Lori Minasian of the National Cancer Institute. She is involved in planning the research. "We don't have definitive data that shows that they will reduce the risk of dying from cancer." The history of cancer screening has served as a warning. In 2004, Japan halted mass screening of infants for childhood cancer after studies found it did not save lives. Last year, a 16-year study of 200,000 women in Britain found regular screening for ovarian cancer did not make any difference in deaths. Cases like these have uncovered some surprises. Screening finds some cancers that do not need treatment. On the other side, many tumors spread so fast that they prove to be deadly anyway. Cancer screening at times can do more harm than good. It leads to worry over false positives, unnecessary costs, and serious side effects from cancer care. Dr. Joshua Othman is an official with Grail. He said current screening tests only look for one kind of cancer at a time, including breast, cervix, colon, or lung. The new blood tests look for many cancers at once. "We screen for 4 or 5 cancers in this country. But many cancer deaths are coming from cancers that we're not looking for at all," Othman said. Dr. Tomas Beer of Oregon Health and Science University in Portland led the GRAIL study that Joyce Aries joined in 2020. After chemotherapy and radiation, doctors told her the treatment was a success. Beer said Aries' case is a hoped-for, ideal outcome. He added, "Not everyone is going to have that." For some, Beer said the blood test could bring false positives. For others, the test found cancer that turned out to be advanced and aggressive. Grail continues to update its test as it learns from these studies. The company is also working with Britain's National Health Service on a study of 140,000 people. They want to see if the blood test can reduce the number of advanced cancers. I'm Jill Robbins.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We conclude the story of the 37th President of the United States, Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon's first term ended with the hope for a complete American withdrawal from the war in Vietnam. Yet, Americans were still angry about the war and its economic effects on life at home. Inflation and unemployment were both high. Some political observers thought Nixon would not win a second term. Nixon, however, was sure the American people would support him. He did not actively campaign in the state primary elections leading up to the Republican nominating convention. He focused much of his attention on foreign policy, including his historic trip to China in February 1972. In May, he traveled to Austria, the Soviet Union, Iran, and Poland. In Moscow, he signed the first Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, or SALT, with the Soviets. But back in Washington, something happened. It was a small incident, but one that would have a huge effect. On June 17, 1972, five men wearing surgical gloves broke into the headquarters of the Democratic Party. The Democratic National Committee offices were located in one of the buildings in a complex called Watergate. Police caught the burglars, and at the time, the incident did not seem very important. But the men carried papers that linked them to top officials in the Nixon White House. The question was, did the president know what was going on? Nixon denied any wrongdoing. In time, the Watergate break-in would lead to a congressional investigation. But in the summer of 1972, attention focused on the presidential nominating conventions. Democrats met in Miami Beach, Florida, and chose George McGovern, a senator from South Dakota, as their candidate for president. The Republicans also met in Miami Beach and, as expected, nominated Richard Nixon for a second term. McGovern, a liberal, attacked Nixon for his policies on Vietnam. However, Nixon easily won the 1972 election. He defeated McGovern, carrying 49 of the 50 states. But the shadow of Watergate would not go away. Two young reporters for the Washington Post, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, had been following the story since the break-in. In early 1973, they found evidence that linked the break-in to White House officials. The evidence also showed that these officials tried to use government agencies to hide the connection. The burglars had been financed with money connected to the committee to re-elect the president. Pressure grew for a full investigation. In April, President Nixon ordered the Justice Department to carry it out. Attorney General Elliot Richardson appointed law professor Archibald Cox as a special prosecutor to lead the investigation.
The committee will come to Alma.
In May, a special Senate committee began its own investigation. A former White House lawyer, John Dean, provided the major evidence.
It is my honest belief that while the president was involved, that he did not realize or appreciate at any time the implications of his involvement. And I think that when the facts come out, I hope the president is forgiven.
By July, the public learned that President Nixon had made tape recordings of some of his discussions and telephone calls. The Senate committee asked him for some of the tapes. Nixon refused. He said, "The President of the United States has a constitutional right to keep such records private." A federal judge, John Sirica, ordered the president to surrender the tapes. Lawyers for the president took the case to the Supreme Court. The High Court supported Sirica's decision. After that, pressure increased for Nixon to cooperate. In October, he offered to provide written transcripts of parts of the recordings. Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor, rejected the offer. So Nixon ordered Attorney General Richardson to dismiss him. Richardson, the nation's top law enforcement officer, refused. Instead, he resigned, as did his deputy, William Ruckelshaus, when Nixon ordered him to fire Cox.
The Watergate drama has taken a half year to unfold. The president's unique actions in firing two popular and respected members of the executive branch and forcing a third to quit took less than 8 hours. The impact of all this, clearly colossal and yet to be measured.
Jerry Landay reporting for ABC News. The incident happened on a Saturday night and became known as the Saturday Night Massacre. Nixon then had Acting Attorney General Robert Bork dismiss Cox, and the president eliminated the office of special prosecutor. He gave the Justice Department the responsibility of continuing the investigation. President Nixon had another political problem in addition to Watergate. In late 1973, his vice president, Spiro Agnew, was forced to resign. A court had found Agnew guilty of violating tax laws. President Nixon asked Gerald Ford to become the new vice president. Ford was a longtime member of Congress from Michigan. By that time, some members of Congress were talking about trying to remove Nixon from office. Was the president covering up important evidence in the Watergate case? Was he, in fact, guilty of crimes? In April 1974, Nixon surrendered some of the recordings of conversations in his office. However, three important ones were missing. The Nixon administration tried to explain, saying the tape machine had failed to record two of those conversations. The third recording, it said, had been erased accidentally. This became known as the famous 18-minute gap. Many Americans did not believe these explanations. 2 months later, the Supreme Court ruled that a president cannot hold back evidence in a criminal case. It said there is no presidential right of privacy in such a case. Congress moved ahead with efforts to bring charges against the president.
Congress now has no alternative but to institute impeachment proceedings.
In July 1974, a committee in the House of Representatives proposed to impeach Nixon, that is, put the president on trial in the Senate. If Nixon were found guilty of crimes connected to the Watergate case, he would be removed from office. Finally, Nixon surrendered the last of the documents sought by congressional investigators. These documents appeared to provide proof that the president had ordered a cover-up of evidence in the Watergate burglary. Every president promises to protect and defend the Constitution. The congressional investigation showed that Nixon had repeatedly misused government agencies in an effort to hide wrongdoing and punish his critics. The hearings also showed that he had tried to block the investigation. On August 8, 1974, Richard Nixon spoke to the nation. His long struggle to remain in office was over.
Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. In the past few days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress to justify continuing that effort. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
By resigning, Nixon avoided impeachment and possible imprisonment. Never before had an American president resigned. On August 9th, Nixon's vice president, Gerald Ford, was sworn in as the nation's 38th president. Soon after becoming president, Gerald Ford made a surprise announcement.
I deeply believe in equal justice for all Americans, whatever their station or former station. But it is not the ultimate fate of Richard Nixon that most concerns me, though surely it deeply troubles every decent and every compassionate person. My concern is the immediate future of this great country.
He pardoned Richard Nixon. Many Americans criticized Ford for doing this, but the new president believed he had good reason. Ford wanted to deal with the other problems facing the nation. He did not want Watergate to go on and on, but the investigation did go on. A number of officials in the Nixon administration went to prison. The effects of Watergate on public opinion and public policy would be felt for years to come. For example, Congress passed laws designed to prevent an administration from using its power to punish opponents. Nixon's abuses also led Congress to order government agencies to provide more information about their intelligence gathering activities. Nixon's actions violated the basic trust between the American public and their elected officials. It led to more aggressive reporting by a new generation of journalists hoping to follow in the footsteps of Woodward and Bernstein. Their coverage of Watergate won a Pulitzer Prize, one of journalism's top awards, and led to a movie based on their book, All the President's Men. It starred Robert Redford as Bob Woodward and Dustin Hoffman as Carl Bernstein. Jason Robards played Washington Post executive editor Ben Bratton.
You got more than one source.
Yes, Harry. Who are they?
Sloan. Sloan and who else?
And there's another guy, Justice, who so far won't confirm the names of the other two who control the fund that we're working on.
What they throw?
He's not a source on this.
Look, do any of them have an axe?
No.
Personal, political, sexual? Is there anything at all on Mitchell?
No.
Then can we use the names?
No.
When is somebody going to go on the record in this story?
You guys are about to write a story that says the former attorney general, the highest ranking law enforcement officer in this country, is a crook. Just be sure you're right.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.